Welcome to Torah Dimecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Lynn Kraft, and today we will be learning Melachim Bet Perek Chaf Aleph, Chapter 21. In the last Perek, Perek Chaf, Chapter 20, we learned of Chizkiyahu's illness, from which he was originally supposed to die, but he was ultimately miraculously cured of his ailment because he davened to Hashem to save him. We also learned that the king of Bavel, Berodach Baladan, sent messengers to Chizkiyahu after this illness, and Chizkiyahu showed them all the wealth and all the riches in his treasure stores, both in his palace and throughout his kingdom. As a punishment for this, Yeshayahu told Chizkiyahu of the future Horban, or destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. In Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, we're introduced to Chizkiyahu's son, Menasheh, who succeeded him to the throne. He was 12 years old when he became king, which, as we discussed in the last parak, Parakhaf chapter 20, meant that he was born after Chizkiyahu's illness, because Chizkiyahu lived for another 15 years after his illness, and Menasheh is only 12 when he becomes king, when his father died. And we're also told that Menasheh ruled for 55 years in Yerushalayim. In Pasuk Bet, verse 2, we're told what an absolutely terrible king he was. Vayas hara b'enei Hashem, and he did evil in the eyes of Hashem. Ki toavot hagoyim asher horish Hashem mibnei b'nei Yisrael, like the abominations of the nations that Hashem cast out for b'nei Yisrael. In Psukim Gimel through Tet, verses 3 through 9, we're told that Menasheh rebuilt the bamot, the platform scattered throughout the land on which people served Hashem outside the Beit HaMikdash, which his own father, Chizkiyahu, had been the first king to finally destroy. He also erected altars to the Baal, fashioned the idol of the Asherah like Ahav, Melech Yisrael, had done. And so in this way, Menasheh was compared to the worst king in Malchut Yisrael. We're told he worshipped all the other pagan gods as well, even building altars to those gods in the Beit HaMikdash itself, which Hashem had proclaimed for his own name. He sacrificed his son in fire to the pagan god Molech, and he practiced magic and witchcraft, all of which we're told he did lahachis, to provoke Hashem and to make him angry. Hashem had promised no more wandering for B'nai Yisrael, and that they would be able to stay in Eretz Yisrael as long as they followed his Torah. But B'nai Yisrael did not listen, and Menasheh, we're told, enticed them to do even more evil than the surrounding nations whom Hashem had destroyed. This is a horrifying description of Menasheh and his kingdom. In fact, it's worse than anything we've seen before in Malchut Yehuda, even including the description of his grandfather Ahaz, who was no great king himself. But his father was Chizkiyahu, the righteous king we just learned about. As the Abarbanel points out, Chizkiyahu and Menasheh were on opposite extremes religiously. As righteous as Chizkiyahu was, that's exactly how evil Menasheh was. But how could this have happened? How could the son of Chizkiyahu, who spent so much time and effort reforming the entire nation from their idolatrous ways, which they had learned from his own father, and inspiring them to worship Hashem, how could he have become so evil as to worship the very evil desire his father had disdained and destroyed? So let's discuss three different approaches of contemporary rabbis to understand how on earth this could have happened. Rabbi Chaim Jachter suggests that this happened because of Chizkiyahu's refusal to have children until Yeshayahu rebuked him for it. As we learned in the last parachaf, chapter 20, that according to Chazal in the Gemara in Brachot, Daf Yud Amid Bet, Amid Aleph, I'm sorry, Chizkiyahu's terminal illness was a punishment for his not having fulfilled the Misa Do'Raita, the Torah law of Peru Revu, be fruitful and multiply, which Chizkiyahu tried to excuse based on what he had seen Baruch HaKodesh with Divine Spirit, that his future progeny would be evil. Because of Chizkiyahu's initial refusal to have children, Rabbi Jachter explained, Menasheh was only born much later in his life. Therefore, instead of having more time to learn from his righteous father and becoming king at an older, more mature age, Menasheh was only 12 when his father died, which meant that he had less time to learn from his father, and because he became king at an immature age, during which time a child is more primed for rebelliousness, perhaps that is what led Menasheh to become the evil king he ended up becoming. Rabbi Jachter points out that had Chizkiyahu fulfilled his mitzvah of Peru Revu at the right time, Menasheh might not have even become rebellious. It was only because of Chizkiyahu's anxiety about his future child being evil that his child ultimately became evil. If he had just fulfilled the mitzvah on time, he might have been able to prevent that Ruach HaKodesh from even having come true. Rabbi Nachum Liebtag posits that perhaps it was because when Menasheh looked at the recent history of Malchut Yehuda, it seemed that things went really well politically, when kings were really bad spiritually, and when kings were really good religiously, they were threatened by foreign invasion. Right? Once Menasheh's grandfather Ahaz had aligned himself with Ashur, and therefore started worshipping Avodah Zarah because of their negative influence, he reigned over a quiet and successful kingdom because of this alliance, despite his having incorporated Avodah Zarah into his kingdom. And before that, he was besieged and he was being attacked. On the other hand, Menashe's own father, Chizkiyahu, who was devoted to Hashem, had to contend with a kingdom of 46 destroyed walled cities, a capital city that was almost completely destroyed until Hashem defeated Sancheriv at the very last moment, and with a personal illness that almost took his own life. So perhaps Menashe decided it just wasn't worth it. He didn't want to have to work so hard to follow Hashem when it wouldn't even guarantee him ultimate royal success. Rav Alex Israel, in line with his general focus in these prakim that we have discussed on Hashem's dislike of foreign alliances because of their negative spiritual influences on the kings and therefore people of Mahal Yehuda, he believes that Menashe descended so far from his father's spiritual heights due to his renewed relationship with the Assyrian Empire, which had reached its peak of power during his reign. Menashe fully embraced being an Assyrian vassal, as had his grandfather Ahaz, and unfortunately, accepting Assyrian governance meant accepting Assyrian gods. We can actually see this based on archaeological evidence in that the cuneiform tablets discovered from the time period of the Assyrian Empire had the most tablets of any other time period that were related to magic and divination. And the letters written by Assyrian royalty at the time contained many references to astrology and magic. Therefore, it was practically impossible for a small vassal state to prevent its being flooded by Assyrian idolatrous and superstitious practices, since they were under Assyrian royal protection. We can also see this in Chazal's description of Menashe in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Bet Amud Bet. We're told there that Rav Ashi was planning to teach about three evil kings, one of whom was Menashe, and he told his students that the next day they would learn about their, quote, friends. Rashi explains that Rav Ashi called these evil kings his, quote, friends, because they were actually Talmidei Chachamim just like they were, but didn't merit Olam Haba, the world to come. That night, Menashe actually appeared to Rav Ashi in a dream and said to him, "You called us your friends and the friends of your fathers?" And Menashe then proceeded to ask Rav Ashi questions on several halachot that Rav Ashi did not know the answers to. So Rav Ashi asked him, "If you're so wise that you know so much Torah, how could you have served Avodah Zarah?" To which Menashe responded, "Had you been there, you would have grabbed the hem of your robes and ran after me to serve Avodah Zarah." We can learn from the way Menashe described the lore of Avodah Zarah during his time period just how powerful the pull was back then, such that he claimed that even Rav Ashi, who was one of the greatest Talmidei Chachamim of his generation, would have been enticed to worship Avodah Zarah himself. This story in the Gemara ends by telling us that the next day Rav Ashi went to his students, and instead of referring to the three evil kings he was going to teach them about as, quote, friends, he said, "We'll start by learning about the rabbis." Yes, they all ended up failing religiously, but he now understood that they were nevertheless to be respected for their Torah knowledge. And yet I think what we can learn from the story is that they still worshipped Avodah Zarah, right? That's how strong the pull was, and that's how hard it was to withstand. In response to Menashe's evil actions, Hashem sent messages to the people of his time through their Nevi'im, their prophets, in Psukim Yud Thri Yud Bet, verses 10 through 12, saying, "Ya'an asher asa Menashe mel Yehuda hatoivot ha'ela, since Menashe, the king of Judah, did all these abominations, he ra mikol asher asu ha'emori asher lefanav, he did more evil than everything the Amori did who came before him, vayachati gam et Yehuda v'gilu lav, and he also caused Yehuda to sin with his idols. Lachin Kwamar Hashem Elokei Israel, therefore, so said Hashem, the God of Israel, Hinini mevi ra'ah al Yerushalayim v'Yehuda. Behold, I will bring evil upon Jerusalem and Judah. Asher kol shom'a titzana shtei aznav, that anyone who hears it, his two ears will tingle. Which is a line that might sound familiar to us from Megillat Eicha, which describes the Chorban, the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. It seems that here Hashem is prophesying for the second time in Sefer Melachim, but much more explicitly this time, the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. And Hashem continued telling his Nevi'im in Psukim Yud Gimel through Tetva, verses 13 through 15, that he will completely destroy Yerushalayim, just as he had destroyed Shomron and the house of Ahav, and that he will cast the survivors into the hands of their enemies, who will then prey upon them. And Hashem explained that he will do this because the people have done evil and angered him from the time their ancestors left Mitzrayim to this day. In Pasuk Tetzayin, verse 16, we're told that Menashe spilled so much innocent blood that it filled the city of Yerushalayim from one end to the other. And Chazal understand this phrase actually to be a reference to Menashe's murder of Yeshayahu Hanavi, who they claim was his own grandfather. And at the very least, he was the reason why Menashe was even born, since Yeshayahu was the one who admonished Chizkiyahu to have a child. The Ralbag interprets this phrase to mean that Menashe killed all those who opposed his new orientation to Avodah Zarah. It's at least somewhat comforting to know that Menashe's decision to reverse spiritual course from his father's kingdom was actually met with opposition from those members of Bnei Yisrael who wanted to keep following Hashem. Unfortunately, Menashe got rid of them. Psukim, Yedayin through Yerchet, verses 17 through 18, conclude Menashe's sinful reign, informing us that his son Amon, spelled with an aleph, not to be confused with the neighboring nation of Amon, spelled with an ayin, that his son Amon, with an aleph, succeeded him to the throne. So to summarize, things were so bad during Menashe's reign that the Horban was threatened again, this time clearly attributed to Menashe's evil deeds. In addition, the Mishnah in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Tzadi Amun Aleph, says, Shlosha melachim, ein lahem chilek le'olam haba. Shlosha melachim, Yeravam, Achav, u'Menashe. Three kings don't have a portion in the world to come. The three kings are Yeravam, Achav, and Menashe. And here the Mishnah associates Menashe with Yeravam ben Nevat and Achav, grouping them together as the three kings who won't have a portion in Olam Haba. Now, if this sounds familiar, maybe, because in Perek Tet Zayin, chapter 16, we learned a Tosefta that actually included four kings on the list, adding Achaz in addition to these three. But for right now, we'll be analyzing this Mishnah's list of three. So what is the similarity between all three of these kings that none of them merited Olam Haba? And if you think about it, each of them introduced Avodah Zarah to Bnei Yisrael in new extremes. Yeravam ben Nevat built shrines to Hashem outside the Beit HaMikdash in Beit El Andan. And while this did not entail worship of a foreign god, it certainly compelled the people of Malchut Yisrael to worship Hashem in a foreign way, which is still considered a form of Avodah Zarah, because the phrase translates as foreign worship. Achav was the first king to bring Baal worship into Eretz Yisrael. This was the first time worship of foreign gods was royally sanctioned to such an extent within a Jewish kingdom. And Menashe introduced Avodah Zarah to Malchut Yehuda in unprecedented ways. This was the first time worship of foreign gods was royally sanctioned to such an extent within Malchut Yehuda specifically. And we see that just from the way that it's described in these psukim, it's significantly more concentrated and much worse than it has ever been before. In Psukim Yotet through Chavbet, we're introduced to Menashe's son Amon, who became king at 22 years old and ruled for only 2 years. We're told, Vayas hara b'enei Hashem, he did evil in the eyes of Hashem, ka'asher asa Menashe aviv, like his father Menashe did. We're told that Amon continued his father's ways, unfortunately, worshipping the Avodah Zarah his father served and abandoning Hashem completely. Psukim Chavbet through Chavhei, verses 22 through 25, inform us that Amon's servants assassinated him in his own palace, indicating that instability was starting to seep into Malchut Yehuda, yet again. To prevent this instability from taking root, the Am Ha'aretz, the aristocracy of Malchut Yehuda, quickly killed all of Amon's assassins and appointed his young son Yoshiyahu as king. They likely did this so that Ashur would not become upset that their vassal king had been killed and assumed that a rebellion was on the rise. We'll learn more about Yoshiyahu's reign starting in the next parak, Parak Chaf Bet, chapter 22. This year is dedicated by Michelle Levine and Susan Schuster and their families in memory of their beloved mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother, Rebbetzin Gloria Leff, Golda Tzivia Bat Baruch. Rebbetzin Leff was a highly regarded principal and Torah teacher, a master educator, whose deep love for teaching Tanakh inspired hundreds of students throughout her lifetime.